Today's guest is brought to you by RadioGuestList.com. He is James Goy Jr., an author of the book How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. Are you ready? Here we go.
You are listening to
having me. It's a pleasure.
Right. It's not every day. You're one of the first authors that I've ever talked to that I know of anyways. So that's cool. The title of your book is very interesting. So maybe just tell us a little bit about the book to start off, and I will go from there.
Well, the book is basically a manual. It's a metaphysical manual. And it stays very true to the title, How to Attract Money Using Mind Power, is really what the book teaches you to do. It's a concise book. I mean, you can actually read this in one or two sittings, yet it's very thorough and well-researched. I do actually quote from 160 separate other books in the book.
Wow.
And so what I've done is I've taken the knowledge that's been out there in metaphysical books and self-help books and spiritual books and whatnot throughout history, really, and I've pulled it all together. You know, nowadays they might call this sort of thing the law of attraction, for instance, but I have tailored everything to the subject specifically about how to attract money using mind power, because that seems to be, a stumbling block for a lot of people. I found over the years that even though they know these techniques and they use them in other areas of their lives, metaphysical techniques such as affirmation, visualization, you know, positive thinking, people would think of it as, but so many people have problems using it for money specifically. Even though they know the principles and techniques, money seems to elude them. But I also wrote the book for people who metaphysics is a new subject, and that's why I did make it so concise, so easy to follow. It's got simple steps and guidelines you can do in each chapter, you know, lists you can make and things. And I really break this subject down into its crucial main elements, and then I present it in a logical format and progression, along with exact things and steps that you can take to apply it. And so even people who this is their first metaphysical or self-help type book, they can understand it and they can actually begin to apply it right away, basically. I mean, even before you put the book down, you can already be doing these things with your mind.
Right. No, that sounds great. Now, to be completely honest, I've heard of metaphysics, but don't know much about it. So maybe briefly, what is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, metaphysics, different people might put it into different terms or define it differently. It's basically, if you look it up, the word, you'll see things like theoretical philosophy of being and knowing, or the philosophy of mind. But the word meta actually means beyond. So metaphysics is purported to be beyond physics, or beyond our normal physical material world physics, or the Newtonian view of the world. And it's much more in line, really, with the quantum physical view of the world, or in line with quantum physics, which is a very forward-thinking, branch, a specific branch of physics, which has, for, many years now, unknown to the general public, perhaps, but there are many in the know, it has been through quantum physical experiments, they have been validating with the mystics and the seers and the spiritual teachers of all times, really, have been saying. So when you think of metaphysics, really, just think of power, that it's powerful truths and principles. And in application, that includes the techniques to apply, the things that the person themselves can actually do. Because, the whole premise here is that consciousness is the creative force, and consciousness goes and is before the material world. And everything we see has a foundation or arose from something else, and that is consciousness, that is energy. And in metaphysics, what we learn is that there is this underlying consciousness or energy that is at the base of all things that are seemingly, you know, of the material world, where in reality there is no material reality as such. I mean, everything, the desk I'm sitting at right now is made of atoms. Those atoms are as far apart from each other as, you know, planets are in our solar system from each other. So solidity is actually an illusion. Things are solid only because we're solid. So when we understand that what we're really dealing with at the base is consciousness / energy, and we come to understand that this energy flows in a certain way and based on certain forces, and basically at the base of that is mind force or thought power, thought energy. When we begin to understand how that works, then we as individuals can actually begin to use specific techniques to make reality work the way we want it to work, and therefore we can actually create things within our minds, decide what we want to come about. And then obviously, you know, we do our part. When people set goals, you know, they make a list, let's say, and there are certain things they have to do. They have to make a phone call. They got to get a business license, whatever it is for that plan or dream. But what we also begin to notice, even more so than that, is that the outside world begins to act and conform in ways that help our vision come into being. Right? People come into our lives. Circumstances come about in, you know, magical ways, it would seem, to make our vision come about. Sometimes these things come about, these goals come about, without us doing anything or hardly anything, because the universe itself, through our subconscious minds and the subconscious of the universe, actually makes things happen. And that's why this is such a powerful understanding.
I have just something that you said that you just kind of sparked something that I actually do in my life. With good friends that I meet with every now and then, you know, some friends I don't see a lot, but some I do, I find myself coming to the same conversation with all of them. And that is, why do we know each other? Like, why did I meet you? You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, for some people it's like either through work or school or whatever, you're kind of thrown in life all together. And, you know, some of them, you know, you don't really make connections with, but others you do. And sometimes you make connections through, like, really, really strange, I would say, experiences. And so I always have these conversations with friends I found that I still hang out with. You know, why do we know each other, and why have we remained friends? Something you said that kind of reminded me of that.
Right. Well, I think that when you're thinking like that, you are actually thinking at a level that the average person on the street doesn't get to. I mean, there's not many average people on the street who question, you know, in their work or their friends, why do we know each other? So it shows that you are, you have an intuitive sense that there is some kind of a purpose or underlying reality here. It's not just happenstance, and it really isn't. The people, you know, one thing that you can know is that, and everyone's had this experience, is that you will meet a person or see them across the classroom or across the cafeteria or whatever in a movie theater and immediately think, boy, I like that person, or boy, that person seems like a nice person. I wouldn't mind knowing that person. And also, we've had the other experience where it's like, well, that dude looks like he's bad news. You know, I don't want anything to do with him. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to leave early.
Right.
Because this guy gives me the willies. Well, that is us sensing the energy of other people. You see, everything is an interplay of energy. And so it really comes down to frequency relationship. And we will attract and be attracted to certain people. And these are people who vibrate at more or less a compatible level to where we're vibrating. Some people may be higher than us, some may be lower, and there won't be that resonance. But with people who are at about the same level, more or less, frequency-wise, in other words, bad people, which, you know, anger and wanting to do harm to people or being like a criminal, a thief. This is very low vibrations. Well, you'll notice that those people seem to attract each other.
Right.
And so do good people. So that's why we know people that we know. That's why we like people we like and we don't like other people. It's energy. And so I tell people, not only in your relationships, but in, for instance, we're talking about attracting money in your business deals and in your investment decisions, as well as knowing people, you know, meeting people, who are you going to associate with, who are you not. And the other thing, another experience is that we've all had is we've walked into a home and just felt immediately welcome or warm. We've walked into other homes or buildings or businesses and felt, again, this place gives me the willies, you know, this place gives me the creeps. So, again, that's energy also. And so what I teach people to do and remind them to do, because it's something we should already know and we do know at some level, is to begin to follow our instincts when it comes to people, investment decisions, business decisions, money decisions. Begin to follow your instincts because you really do know a whole lot more. And it could just be the vague feeling, something in the pit of your stomach or the hairs standing up on the back of your neck or whatever it is for you, depending on whether the situation is good or bad. We all have this sense that we have some kind of people would call it intuition. We have an inner guidance system. And it's tuned to the universe. It's actually a higher part of ourselves. It knows things we can't know. And we can't know how it knows. But all we need to do in many cases is just to follow the leadings or the promptings or the feelings that we get of what we should do or what we would like to do. And if we do that, it could be as simple as, you know, you're driving home from work and you decide that you just really want to go a different way.
Yeah.
And you should do that because you may meet someone who is going to be a part of your life or can help you in some ways. Perhaps there was going to be an accident a block down the road, and you don't know why. You're just getting this urge to turn left. But if you do, maybe that accident will happen, and now you won't have to be there. Maybe it won't happen.
Right.
Maybe because you're not there, you're saving yourself and someone else.
Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of times, as you go through this and you live like this, a lot of times – quite often over a number of years, you'll begin to see, oh, I see why I had to do this, or I see why I had those negative feelings about this guy. He's a sociopath. Look, he stole this money from so-and-so. It's a lot of times we won't know, though. We'll take actions based on instincts, and we won't be able to learn in our physical lives why that came about, but it doesn't matter. Sometimes you'll know why later. Sometimes you won't. The point is, instinct cannot be wrong. Okay, because it comes from a higher part of us. If we can misinterpret and misjudge and second-guess instinct and intuition, but true intuition, if that's what it is, cannot be wrong. So I like people to start to get that in their minds and to become committed in not only financial matters but in all matters, to begin to really tune in to that inner guidance system and begin to follow it. And the more that it's validated for you how it is right so many times, the more comfortable you'll get with it, the more confidence you'll have in it, and the more powerful you become in it. Because the more you follow intuition, the stronger your intuitive promptings will get. And this can help you stay safe. This can help you stay, you know, happy and have a good life. And it can help your bank account in many ways.
Right. Two questions that kind of come up from that for me is, one, if you had to guess a percentage of people that go off of intuitions and that feeling, what would you think it is? And then the second question is, why don't you think more people use that as a way to maybe lead their lives or live their lives?
Right. They're both good questions. On the first question, I would actually say that all people use this. All people use their intuition to some degree.
Right.
And so there's the rub, because some are, you know, let's say they're a 1 on a scale from a 1 to 10, and other people are a 9 or a 10.
Right.
There's a big difference in there. There's also another big difference in there in that some people recognize intuition for what it is, and other people don't. In other words, they just kind of have a feeling, and so they don't do something, or they do something. but they don't actually have a conscious recognition. They could not articulate for you, yeah, I had this intuition or this inner knowing and I followed it.
Right.
In other words, they're more, you know, all animals have instincts.
Right.
But if you talk to a wolf, you know, or a leopard at the zoo, it can't explain those to you. It has no concept of instincts. It just lives within them.
Right.
It just does. And so
what it does.
So many people are like that. They can't really articulate it and don't understand it. They haven't identified it, even though they've heard of the concept. So to answer that first question, all people do, all people have used it, all people do use it to some degree, but some are a whole lot more than others, and there's a whole gamut of the recognition factor, whether they really recognize what they're doing. And then you get up to the upper levels of 7, 8, and 9s and 10s on the scale of 1 to 10, and those are the people like me who actively understand this, we know it, we look for it, and we actively try to cultivate the intuitional factor or muscle that we have. And so that's, you know, that's kind of the wide gamut there. And for your second question was why more people don't do it. Well, part of that was answered in the fact that a lot of people don't really recognize it. It's like a foreign concept. Everyone's heard the word, and, you know, some people just think of, yeah, you know, psychics have good intuition, or, you know, that guy has a real good business sense. They don't really equate it or line it up with the fact that it can be part of their life. So why do they not do it more? Because they don't even really think about it. They don't think of the possibility of doing it. And even people who do know about intuition, I constantly have to remind people, you know, you believe that this is true, but what I want to remind people is that, and what I need to remind people of often, is that it can be true for you. This isn't just for other people. You know, so you know the old saying, so many people, they say, oh, that's great for him, but I could never do it. Or, yeah, oh, I'd love to be able to have those kind of instincts, but that's I don't.
Right.
I'm not good with money. I always make bad money
right.
decisions. And those are self-fulfilling. They become self-fulfilling prophecies.
Right.
So a lot of it really, for both of those questions, is just a misunderstanding. But when people do learn that it's possible, and when they start to understand the many benefits they can gain, and in this sense of what I teach, the financial benefits, it really gives them an incentive to want to think about it a little more, recognize it better, see it when it comes, and try harder to follow it. Because we often get, everyone's had the experience where they've had a bad feeling about something, but they went and did it anyway, and then later they wished, like, I knew that guy was bad, or I knew I shouldn't have ridden my motorcycle that night, or whatever. Well, hindsight doesn't help a whole lot, except for the fact that it can teach us to do better in the future,
right.
to actually follow our instincts.
Right. To listen to that instinct or that voice or whatever you want to call it inside that's telling you, don't do this, or maybe you should have done this, you know.
Exactly.
So I checked out both your website, and I also went on YouTube and saw some videos that you have up. And one of the things that you touch on that I was interested in finding maybe a little bit more about was affirmation. You speak about that?
Certainly. Affirmation, I'll start this off by reading, because affirmation, people who know me or have heard me often, they know that it's actually one of, if not my favorite metaphysical technique. And I have several reasons for that. One is basically that it's so easy to do and anyone can do it. And number two is, even so, the benefits of it are just so far-reaching and can be massive. But an affirmation is basically a statement of something we want to come about. But we state it in the present tense because the subconscious mind has no understanding of time. Everything exists in the present, and we don't say how the thing comes about because we don't want to limit the subconscious mind. We don't want to limit the universe or our own subconscious minds in how it can bring about what it is that we want. So we state what we want. We do it in the present tense. But the quote from my book, Affirmations is a chapter in the book, chapter 10. And this quote is from Henry Thomas Hamblin, and he wrote a book called Dynamic Thought in 1921. And what he said is, not only do affirmations impress the subconscious mind, thus producing action in accordance with the will, but they project outwards from the mind into space, attract forces and help from other sources, and bring them to minister and to bless. And so, you know, affirmation is probably, especially for people who don't have a lot of experience or in metaphysics or mind power, or experience, you know, in it or an understanding of it, this would be one of those techniques that they could just pick one technique and they could just use this and they will see results. They will see results. If they come up with an affirmation that, you know, I have, you know, well, I came up with an affirmation one time. I was $10,000 in credit card debt. And I was making very little money, and I was going deeper in debt every month because I was not only the shortfall from my paycheck was made up with credit cards every month, plus I had to pay the credit cards every month out of borrowed money. So, you know, I had a bunch of cards going, and so this was really spiraling out of control. And I knew these techniques, but like many people, I hadn't really applied them to money specifically, especially for a while. I finally said to myself, you know, this doesn't have to be. I mean, I need to get out of this credit card debt or I'm going to lose my credit cards. And I decided to just focus on one simple metaphysical technique, and that was affirmation. The affirmation I came up with was, all of my credit cards are completely paid off. That was it. All of my credit cards are completely paid off. And it stated exactly what I wanted in the present tense as if it's already come about, with no reference whatsoever to how it came about. And affirmations you can do verbally, you can do them mentally, you know, you're just reciting them in your mind, you can write them down if you want at times. And I did this affirmation upon waking and upon going to sleep, right before sleep at night and in the morning upon waking, because that's when our conscious minds are the closest, have the closest connection really to the subconscious mind. And I did it throughout the day on and off. I did it a lot in my mind. I did it also verbally. I was riding a bicycle across town to the job I had, and I would do it out loud, riding the bike in certain neighborhoods where there wasn't so many people around. And I just did this hundreds and thousands of times, day after day. Now, the first couple of days, you know, they were a little, you know, it's like I'm thinking, maybe even the first few days, whatever it was, I was just still thinking, like, how's this going to happen? And I just had to get rid of that thought, because the how is not our concern. It's the what. We got to decide what we want. The universe will figure out how. And so this about four, and by the way, if people are online, they can go to YouTube, you mentioned, and I have a video there. It's called Affirmation Story, and I basically tell this story. It's about a 6.5-minute video, I think. And but 4 to 6 weeks later of doing, after doing this affirmation every single day, someone came into my life who I didn't really know that well, but I had met once or twice before through another person, but I didn't really know them that well. And I was talking to this person, and the subject of, you know, finances and things came up. I was talking about my dilemma, my $10,000 dilemma. And this person had actually come into a whole lot of money within just the day or two before, whatever it was, I forget, like many, many, many times $10,000. And they actually wrote me a check on the spot for $10,000 and said, basically, you don't need that debt. And it was a gift. It was not a loan. And things like that just don't happen. But they do happen when you line yourself up with the universe in a way where you make it so they have to happen. You see?
Right.
And I had already racked my brains for months on end trying to figure out how to get out of that debt. I could not do it. It was beyond me. So basically what I did finally, I should have done it sooner if I was smart, but finally I wised up and I just turned it all over to the universe. And within a few days of starting that affirmation, I absolutely believed it. I mean, I was so happy and joyful that I was finally out of that credit card debt. It wasn't in the future in my mind. It had already happened. And when I was saying all of my credit cards are completely paid off, it became just this joyful experience that I was actually thinking the thoughts and feeling the feelings that I would have as if it had actually come about. And that is the force that went out into the universe and that made things, you know, come about. And sometimes I use this story to point out the difference between what I teach and what some people might term black magic. People who use black magic might do something like put a spell on a person or send thoughts to some particular person, let's say, to give them money.
Right, right.
Whereas when you're working, I like to call it in the light as opposed to in the darkness, because anytime we start to consciously try to affect and other people with thought power against their will and knowledge, to me that's black magic. But what I teach is that when you put the thoughts out to the universe through your subconscious mind, it knows how to work things out in completely harmonious ways where everyone involved benefits. And everything that happens is for everyone's highest best good, and there are no losers. Now, about the time that I started doing my affirmation, this person's life started changing in some very fundamental ways that actually caused a complete and total disruption in their life. I mean, they left their profession, they left where they lived, everything changed for this person. But it was all 100% positive.
Right.
And for the best good of this person. And also, it doesn't always work out like this, because sometimes when you receive from one place, you know, you won't really give back to that place because there won't be the opportunity. Or we give to people or to whatever, and our good doesn't come back from the same people, but it comes through other people. But sometimes where we give is where we get, and it turned out, we didn't know this at the time, but I was able to help this person a lot with letter writing and things that they really, you know, could not have accomplished without my help. So they didn't give me the money for that reason. Neither one of us knew it was going to progress into this, but I was also able to help them in very profound and life-changing ways.
Right.
Just like their money had basically freed me up and changed my life at that time in many profound ways.
Did you ever have that conversation that I was talking to you that I mentioned earlier about, you know, why do we know each other? Have you ever talked to them about that, or has that ever come up in your mind?
Like that particular person?
Right, right.
Not really, because it's in, you know, it's just such a working part of my mental workings, you know. I'm 52 years old, and I started studying this stuff when I first came to California from New Jersey, and that was more than 30 years ago. And so I don't even think about things like that as like being anything strange.
Right, right.
So like, it's not like you know, you ask people, you ever wonder why your hair is black? You're like, you wouldn't think of it because it's just black and it's nothing to really talk about. So now some people would tell you, you know, I went to a school many years ago and I studied about past lives and things and did a lot of research on that. And so some people would say that, you know, part of this could be that we know people from other existences, whether you want to call them past lives or whatever. In other words, we have a connection. We've actually met this person or we know this soul on some level even before we meet here.
Right.
And some of us are helping those who helped us before and things of that nature. So there's many different you know, theories or things that, you know, you could go down those roads. But really what it all comes down to in the final analysis is, again, frequency relationship. It's just that vibrational compatibility, that things feel right. And, you know, I've had people, I had a person in my life many years ago who was a very important part of my journey, and it was a girlfriend I had very early after coming to California. And I later in my past life work, you know, identified this person from past lives and all this stuff. But here's the thing. I was hitchhiking one day, and I was very young. I was, what, 20 years old or something. I was hitchhiking in the San Diego area here, and a guy on a motorcycle picked me up. And turns out he was going to some party, And he said, well, why don't you come along, you know, have a beer, whatever. And I went, and there was this person who ended up being, you know, like the most important person in my life for the next 5 years or whatever it was.
Right.
What's the chances of that happening? Was that just happenstance? Was that just a coincidence? Or was that the universe orchestrating, bringing these two people together that at this time in their lives each needed to be with that other person?
Right, right. And that's,
you see?
And that's what I recognize with those friends that I have that conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with friends that, I, like I said, I don't necessarily see all the time, but we remain in touch because we have, like, some bond that can't really be explained.
Right.
I would normally say, well, you know, maybe I only see you, like, maybe 4 times a year, if that. So someone would look at that relationship and be like, well, that's not a very close relationship. But it's mainly because distance separates us. So if we were closer, we'd definitely see each other more. So I think that, again, that connection is, you know, that's what I question is,
right,
why do I feel so close to this person even though I normally don't see them?
Right, and even when you get together with a person like this after, let's say, 4 months or a year, or it could be 10 years,
right,
doesn't it, I mean, after the first 3 minutes of talking, it's like you saw them yesterday.
Exactly.
Right? It's just this very comfortable, you know, vibrational flow.
Right.
You know, that we know this is kin. You know, this is friend. This is, on a vibrational level, somebody that I have a strong connection to, even though, you know, most of the times we can't articulate it or explain it. There could be different explanations for it according to who you talk to. But the point is, it feels like you went home again.
Right.
You see? Yeah.
And then, so we talked about affirmation. The other thing that I wrote down that I kind of wanted to speak to you about, that I find more and more, is just all around, and something you said before. Well, I equate affirmation with maybe positive thinking or like a positive energy out there, and
mm-hmm.
using that like as a way to, you know, to make decisions, or just a way, just an outlook on life. Like, say for example, someone's trying to get a job. You know, telling yourself, hey, I'm going to get this job, or, you know, feeling good. Not going to the job interview afterwards and saying, oh, I should have answered this way, or I should have answered that way. I think that, you know, I equate, like I said, affirmation with that positive energy. Something else that I saw from your website that would kind of go against that with some people, like a positive way of thinking, is fear. You mentioned fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that all around. Like, it's like sometimes, I mean, if you, I think, you know, news is good, but if you watch too much news, you know, it injects this fear in somebody, that I think can throw someone's positive thinking off. I try to remain positive I try to just remain positive and have a good outlook. But I find, yeah, the more negative influences or news that I watch, where, you know, fear is constantly be putting out there for people, it makes it hard, you know, to remain positive.
Right, exactly. You know, because fear itself is, we're using the creative process in reverse. Because the creative process, the manifestation process, is to build in our minds the mental constructions of what it is we want to create, and then to add in our positive emotion and belief to make those things come about. But when we fear things, we basically do the same thing. We create the mental pictures and we add emotion, in this case, negative emotion. And we speak in line with, you know, oh boy, you know, I hope this isn't going to work out, or I hope I get that job, but I'm probably not going to. Again, we're thinking and speaking things into existence. And, you know, there was times many years ago where I actually would just get rid of the TV for months on end and not even watch any news or anything else.
Right.
And I don't think that today we can really do that, because things are moving so fast and there's so much that we do need to know. So now I do watch it, but I like to take it in short little bursts.
Right.
And in other words, I'd rather watch, let's say, Peter Jennings for a half hour than CNN for 12.
Right.
You know, like when there's an, a war going on or
right.
there's a disaster, people just soak it in all day long. And but also the word news is can be a funny one too, because I don't believe everything I see on the so-called news.
Right.
And so the facts are not always what they're purported to be, and they sometimes don't mean what we're supposedly being led to believe that they believe. So I tell people, you know, take in enough of so-called quote-unquote reality so that you can function intelligently within it. In other words, especially if you're investing money or you're going to open some kind of a business, you have to have certain understandings of what everyone else thinks is going on. And, you know, the news, quote-unquote, is useful for that too, because it's just as useful for me to know, even though I know some of what they're saying is not true, you know, and sometimes I know, I say, well, that ain't true because, you know, I've been studying such and such on the Internet for the last 3 months. That's all baloney. But it's also helpful to me not only to know that what he just said isn't true, but to know that that's what most people believe. You see, we want to know what the reality of the world is. We also want to know what everyone else, the average man on the street, thinks it is.
Right.
And then with our overriding understanding that it's all an illusion, that it's all based on energy and consciousness, and that none of it is as solid or unchangeable or inevitable as we're being led to believe. When you take those into account and you kind of mix them into this philosophy of truth or this philosophy of living, it just puts you in a much better position to use your mind power, to be able to use your mind power to create the life you want and the financial circumstances that you want, so that we can use these techniques we're talking about, such as affirmation, for financial gain.
Right.
But we do need a certain amount of information. We need to understand, you know, whatever it has to do with our business. I mean, for me, I'm a writer. Well, you know, before I became a writer, my book was published in November of 2007, and I'm pushing 50 years old at the time. And guess what? I had never even been on the Internet. I didn't have a computer. I just had no interest. I didn't want that complication. I knew and figured out that if anybody's ever going to know about my book and my future books, I'm going to have to do this. So I finally did do it. So that's what I tell people. You need to learn and do what you need to learn and do to get what it is that you want to get.
Right.
And a part of that is understanding what the world or the man is telling you every night, what he's trying to get you to believe is true.
Right.
And then another layer is hopefully understanding more than that of which parts are true. And then beyond that, knowing that there's an overriding spiritual reality to all of it. And that with an understanding of that, we can actually use mind power to govern circumstances, to conform more to how we see fit or how we want them to conform.
Right.
Most powerfully in our own lives, secondarily in our own families, and it fans out from there, our sphere of you know, contacts and whatever. At our businesses, we can have an effect. Through our friendship circles, we can have an effect. Organizations or causes we're involved with. You know, the individual is not going to change the world economy
right.
through consciousness, but they can certainly change their own economy and their own financial circumstances, you know, 1,000%. And when enough people start doing it on the individual basis, it's going to have a much far-reaching effect and will actually affect, for instance, the economy on a global scale.
Right. That makes sense. It would be more of a, you know, you can't expect corporations or banks or, you know, government, whatever, to bail everyone else out. It has to be more grassroots and everyone starting, you know, taking responsibility for themselves and starting that way.
Exactly, and that's why we don't do affirmations like, let's see, the recession is over.
Right.
I mean, that's futile. That's
right.
futile. But
right.
I got a 20% raise, or I have $100,000 in the bank. Those we can do.
Right.
But not, you know, so and so over there stepped down today and gave up power. You know, that's not going to happen based on your affirmation. So
right.
you know, use the power where it is the most powerful and where it has the most effect, and that's in our own lives. And as examples of that to other people, we affect their lives, and obviously in other ways. When we have more resources, when we have more finances, we are able to help and share and, you know, show the way to those around us. So this should never be done from a selfish standpoint, you know. Right. And I do teach in the book that giving is a huge part of the receiving process. And so I talk about different aspects of that in the book. It's a circle. It's a wheel that spins. And money has to come in, of course, but we also need to allow it go out. And if we can't give, or if we can't share, or if we can't spend on things we need or want, then we are actually creating not having money. Because right. The reason that we talked about fear, the reason we might fear spending money, the only reason we would fear spending what we have now is because we think we might need it later and then not have it.
Yeah.
But in that thought is creating that eventuality, because we're thinking, we're creating images of not having it, and we're putting our fear in it, which is the emotion, and often our speech patterns will back it up, and there we have the creative process, but only to our detriment, to our financial detriment, instead of to our financial building up.
Right. Well, and two, if someone's like, I'm not gonna spend money, you know, I need to save as much as I can, you know, fear spreads. So, you know, I think that that person obviously has their mind made up, and then the people around them, they're like, well, you know, like, John's not spending money. I'm not going to spend money either, because, you know, he knows what he's doing with his money. So it's
right.
It's kind of like this wave that starts and just kind of takes over if everyone thinks that way.
Exactly. And it becomes more or less a mob mentality. I call it the mass consciousness, you know, and the financial economic consciousness is so different than it was just a few years ago. But one thing, too, is that I tell people, you know, you might not be as good at your mind power yet than you think. So you don't go out and blow $100, your last $100 on a movie and dinner if you don't know how you're going to pay your rent 2 days later.
Right.
Because if your miracle that you're trying to work out doesn't come about, and besides, if you were that good with mind power, I don't think you'd be down to your last $100 anyway.
Right.
But so you do, especially in times like these, you want to be a little, you want to be rational about it too. But you also want to have enough faith so that you can start reaching out, being a little more bold with your spending or whatever, or generous or whatever, than you might have been comfortable being a year ago. But also some of it has to do with how we choose to frame things or look at things or verbalize things. You know, if there's something that if you had a whole lot of money you would get, but you don't quite have enough and you don't feel comfortable getting it, most people fall back on the saying that I can't afford that. And that's one of the most destructive sayings to our finances, to affirm, which is basically an affirmation and a self-fulfilling prophecy that we can't afford it. Better would be simply saying, I choose not to purchase that at this time.
Right.
And if you can see, I think anybody can see that that is such a fundamental change. The outcome is the same. You're saying the same thing. I'm not spending this money on that. But in the one sense, you're saying, I don't have the ability to, I don't have enough money to. In the other way, you're saying, listen, I'm making a conscious choice. I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
And one is negative to our finances. The other thought is, you know, positive, or at least it's neutral. It's positive in the sense that it's putting us in control. We're acknowledging that we are in control of what we do. We don't even have to explain it, and we certainly don't have to verbalize negative reasons for it of things that we don't want to be true, because we know that in the verbalization, in the creating the thoughts and images, which is going to happen based on the verbalization, you know, one gives rise to the other. It's kind of the chicken or the egg thing. And then you can't have images or verbalize things without having some kind of thoughts associated with them. And I mean, emotion. So there you have all the elements of manifestation.
Right.
So it's a subtle distinction, some would think, but it's a very important and far-reaching distinction.
I have just a few other questions. In doing what you've been, and sorry again, how long have you been writing or researching this and you know, speaking to people about it?
Well, actually, I started reading and studying about this stuff just shortly after I came to California. You know, I found my first book and then started seeking out everything I could find on this subject from wherever I could find it. Yard sales, swap meets, thrift stores, bookstores, used and new, whatever. Not the internet, because I wasn't on the internet then. Of course, now I have Amazon or whatever. But so that's more than 30 years that I've just been an avid reader of this type, this general subject matter. And I wasn't in California very, very long, just a few years before I actually did find myself teaching this stuff. And I would all around San Diego County here, and also in California, and also in Sedona, Arizona, where I lived for a while, I would teach small groups at metaphysical bookstores and things of this nature. Sometimes, you know, just single lectures, sometimes workshops that lasted a couple months, in one case an ongoing class that lasted about a year. And so I had been actually teaching these types of things for all these years, on and off. And that's one way, or that's a key way, that I really became so aware, intimately aware of how people think and how money was a separate issue, even though the process of attracting money is exactly the same process of attracting a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, or a better job or a nicer home or whatever. It's the same process.
Right.
But there's something different about it, and that is that it's harder for people to believe for some reason they can attract money. And then there's other issues. People don't feel worthy of money and all these kind of things, or they have negative thoughts and pre-associations with money. You know, rich people are evil and all this kind of thing. If people are rich, they, you know, must have done something bad to get their money. Or if he has so much or if I get so much, then that means other people have to have less. None of these things are necessarily true. Sometimes rich people are bad, but not always.
Right.
So in the teaching over the years, that's where I really got this, just this very intimate knowledge of how people think and of what their blocks were and why they weren't applying this this profound metaphysical, you know, teaching and knowledge to money itself. And so it's been a very long, you know, road. And years ago, I did write a couple of a few, you know, small metaphysical booklets. 30 pages, 50 pages, whatever, and taught classes based on them. But it wasn't until, again, November of 2007 when I actually, you know, published my first book, my first actual real book, you know, with an ISBN number and all that, and got on the internet and actually came into this as my life's work.
Right. So I'm kind of going to put you on the spot here. And you can take as long if you can take as long or as little as you need to think about it. But in all your years of research and talking to people, teaching and all that, what have you learned from people? Like, if you could, you know, if there was a book out there that said, you know, you had a bunch of experts together, authors, doctors, whatever, this is what I've found to be true about humanity or just about people in general. What would you say that you've learned about people and all the experiences?
What I have learned about people through just life and through observation, through talking to people, really I can, you know, thank my understanding of metaphysics and my study of metaphysics, because without it, I wouldn't have known what to look for. I wouldn't have known what I was looking at. But what I've learned about people is that we are so much more powerful than we realize. And even people who don't, never even heard of or entertained the concept of attracting anything or of mind power or of metaphysics, you know, there's people there out on the streets. They don't even, if you bring up these subjects, they just kind of get this glazed over look because they can't relate to it. They don't know what you mean.
Right.
Even those people teach me, because I listen to how they speak. I see their, you know, over years and years, knowing people for different lengths of time and being a man in managerial positions in the past in different fields, and actually hiring and training and working with people, firing them when necessary. and then just life, just friends, family, or whatever, is that we all are the creators of our own lives. People, if you listen, once you know this and you listen to people and they say, well, I always, you know, I never have any good luck. And sure enough, they never have any good luck. Now, the people think that they don't have any good luck and therefore that's why they say it. But I would like to ask them to entertain another theory, which might be that because they say it is why it's true.
Right.
Because they speak it into existence. Because when they speak, they are creating images and feelings and thoughts that are in line with what they're speaking. And actually those thoughts and images and feelings give rise to those words, but the words then reinforce all of that, the feelings, the images, and the thoughts. And so that, you know, and if there was a main message for me to give to the individual, to a person, you know, I see someone on the street or just someone I know or hardly know or whatever, virtual or real life, whatever, you know, if I can pass on to someone that they are more powerful than they think. They are not bound by the status quo, the laws of man, the prevailing economic conditions or business cycles when it comes to money, which is what I, you know, mainly try to help them with. And one reason is because I think that with enough money, you can directly or indirectly improve virtually every area of your life. But that's what I've learned about people, and that's what I try to teach them about themselves, is that they have so much more power, and their power, you know, than they've ever realized, and that they are tapping the tiniest, tiniest percentage of it, and most of that is not even conscious. They're not even conscious of what they're doing.
Right.
And so I want people to know, and I know about them, that they have so much more ability and power and possibility than they ever imagined. And that has to do with their financial lives and every other area of their lives. And speaking of financial lives, it can be independent of, or the individual can rise above, the prevailing economic climate, the prevailing business cycles of whatever business they happen to be in. People always make money. People always get rich, even in the worst depressions. It never fails. And there's just a difference of what do they know and what do they do and what is their attitudes and what is their beliefs. So we have so much more power than we could ever imagine or you know, even than I can imagine, because it's always expanding for me how much power I have. When I do things and I see things, sometimes, you know, the next day or something, there's a phone call or some kind of happening or whatever. Can't think of anything in particular to give an example, but I'm even awestruck after, you know, writing a book on this. I've got a couple more books written that I haven't published yet, studying this stuff for 30 years, teaching it on and off during that period. Even my concept of what's possible for me expands. And where does our power lie? Our power lies within our vision, within our ability, our imagination, our ability to conceive of possibilities, and then in our ability to increase our desire for those things so that we start to get some energy foundation under them, and to increase our belief of those things and ultimately our acceptance of those things, and to do so in a way which is congruent with the rest of our lives. In other words, do those things, build your desire and your belief and your expectancy in the visions that you create and you determine are best for you or that you want to bring about, and then act as if and speak as if and do everything that you do as if those things are true or as if those things will come about, as if these things that you want to accomplish are possible for you. And if people will live like that, they will do so much more than they ever dreamed possible. There's a saying that most people die with their music still in them. And I want people to find their music and to express it. And to be able to do that in modern society, I think it takes a lot of money.
Right.
You need to be able to live where you want. You need to be able to travel. You need to be able to buy books, go to seminars, you know. anything you can think of, any area of life can be improved either directly or indirectly with more money.
Right.
And that's why I make that my focus, to teach people, number one, you've got so much more power than you realize. Number two, I can show you how to apply it and how to direct it. And number three, you can have a totally, you know, expanded financial life than you're thinking you can have. And when we get to that point when you understand it, determine what you want, start to apply these techniques, you'll prove it to yourself. And then you will be your own best teacher and your own best advocate.
Right. I would say that I would almost say, are you a psychic? Because the next thing I was going to bring up was music. On your website, you have a page that just mentions, you know, that you're self-taught on the guitar and you sing and all that. I only bring this up because I'm, you know, I would never claim necessarily to be a musician, but I do play drums and I play guitar, and it's almost, I would say it's probably the closest thing I come to being like a spiritual person. Anytime I learn something new on an instrument, or I make, you know, a song or something that I really enjoy, I get like this high that isn't like anything else. Maybe just speak about what music means to you in your life.
Right. Well, it's, you know, the creative process in itself on the material level is just such an awe-inspiring process. And it could be art, it could be music, it could be writing, you know, it could be many things. But it is, I do look at it as a spiritual process. You know, and one example that we could give to kind of get a sense of what I'm talking about is that, and I don't even remember where I saw it, somewhere online, but there was a whole list of, what was it, inventions that have come about, whether it's the telephone, electricity, and different things like this. And what the article was about was that more than one person, two or more people, came up with each of these ideas that were on this list.
Right.
At basically the same time. You know, Bell invented the telephone. There's another guy who claims to have done it basically at the same exact time. And if these things are anything other than coincidence, which I believe they are, then it points to this process that the things we're bringing through are not necessarily things that we are creating, and certainly not within our conscious minds. In other words, we are tapping into something. And as a songwriter, you know, I'm a lyricist and a songwriter, I just know this process. And also being a poet, you know, and a writer, I just know this process so intuitively. I mean, sometimes, you know, I've sat down with the guitar. And I'll open up a book, and I'll look at a couple of chords or something, and I'll start kind of strumming on them. And not always, but sometimes something just grabs me, and I know there's a song there.
Right.
I absolutely know there's a song there. And I grab my recorder, and actually I've sat down and just written song after song in one day.
Right.
And I'll grab my recorder, and sure enough, because, you know, you two chords, and they say, wow, that's a villain. And then you do the little strumming, and it's like, there's something here. And I'll grab the paper and the pen to capture the lyrics and to write the lyrics and formulate them, and the recorder so that I can record the melodies, because I don't write music, so I have to record my voice for the melodies. And some people write lyrics first, some people write music first and then add the other.
Right.
Some people only write one or the other, but I write both, and they come through at the same exact time. And the songs that I write seem to already be finished before I start them. It's like I already know where they're going. It's just amazing. And they just pour out. I mean, it just sometimes takes just minutes to write a song. And then I might tweak one word or something, you know, or a couple of words over the next few days. But it's just there. And so, and I think musicians, and I don't consider myself a musician either, you know, but I can play the guitar enough to get my own stuff across.
Right.
And even people in sports, they call it being in the zone. It's a spiritual experience. It's one of those days where, and another thing is, with gamblers. When I was a kid back in New Jersey, there was this one kid who would get on these streaks. And he, no matter if we went to the horse track, because I used to gamble a little in my younger days, went to the Meadowlands to bet on the trotters, or played cards, or even just pitched. We used to pitch quarters out on the corner in front of the corner store. This guy would get on these runs where he just could not lose at anything. And he just expected to win. He was so nonchalant about it. He was in the zone.
Right.
Gamblers get in the zone. Musicians, songwriters, artists, athletes, you know, they get out there and they'll tell you it's like another worldly experience. And I believe it's a spiritual experience. And that's why it's so flawless when it happens. And that's why people say things like you said, is that when you're doing your music, there are times when that's when you feel the most spiritual.
Right.
That's when you feel connected to something greater than yourself.
Right.
And I actually have a chapter in the book called Right Livelihood. And the theory is that there are things that we can do better than anyone else because no one else can do what we can do exactly the way we would do it. In other words, no one could have written the book I wrote. People could write other books on the same subject.
Right.
In a billion years, they would have never written this exact book. And so the theory is in Right Livelihood that we start to find these things, whether it's writing, whether it's music, or you could put things together. I put my love of writing and my love of metaphysics together to find what for me is my right livelihood.
Right.
And that is doing your spiritual work, doing something that allows you to give in a unique way. But also, what we find is that it's not really work at all. I mean, writing a song isn't work to me, writing a book, you know, doing this interview. I would do all of this even if I wasn't being paid.
Right.
And obviously the proof is that I did it for a long time without being paid. It took me a long time trying to write, and I have many books I've started and never finished. And then even after I published my book, it was quite a while before I could actually start to figure out how to sell more than just a few a month and to become known on the internet and all these things. But I would do this, I would still be doing it to the degree I'm doing it, even if the money hadn't started catching up yet.
Right.
That's when we know we're in our right livelihood, whether it's whatever form of business. We take something that we love to do, or a combination of those things, we somehow turn it into our livelihood. And it might not be so right from the beginning. It might cost us money to pursue these things. But in the long run, they are, number one, going to make you the most financially successful. Because if you look at really, truly financially successful people, like way at the top of the food chain, they're doing stuff that they love.
Yeah.
And even though they have hundreds of millions of dollars, or even billions of dollars in some cases, they are still working 12 or 14 hours a day.
Right.
And to them, it's not work, though. It's a game. It's the challenge. It's, you know, whatever, however they look at it, they feel driven and carried through it, as opposed to the average person who has to drag themselves out of bed on Monday morning and push themselves through the next week of doing something that they hate,
right,
or that they find distasteful or boring. And I think that's really a very soul-destroying thing to do. I wish everyone could find their right livelihood. And people say, well, then everyone would be a rock star or a movie star, and there'd be nobody to take the tolls on the toll booth, you know?
Right.
Like back in New Jersey on the turnpike. And you know what? There's people who they love that job. They wouldn't want to do anything else, and they would almost do it if they didn't get paid. So there's a place for everyone, and there's places for different people at different times in their lives. No one moves to L.A. and becomes Tom Cruise by the weekend. You see?
Right.
They wait tables.
Right.
So, you know, I tell people, don't ever worry that there's not going to be anybody to wait tables. Even if they're the next Tom Cruise, they're going to have their time.
Right.
You see?
Right.
But it all goes back to this thing that you started talking about with the music. It's a spiritual foundation, and it's a process that's flowing in and through us, as opposed to something that we're just happen to be doing in the material world.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, you know, music gives me that feeling. And you mentioned, you know, it could be art, it could be anything else. It's, you know, everyone has like an outlet.
Certainly. For some people, it's business.
Right.
For some people, it can be business or sports or whatever it is.
Right.
And all of these things can be made to pay big in a financial way, and sometimes in ways that we wouldn't have imagined. In other words, somebody might have a lifelong love of sports. You know, they played from Little League on up, but they've got – they're just too old, or they don't have the physical capabilities, or they can even be disabled in some way. They can't actually play sports, but maybe they also have a love of speaking or of writing. They can be a sports writer. They could be a sports commentator. So we can, you know, and it's unique for each person.
Right.
And even sports careers, they're limited, most of them, because it has to do with age and whatnot.
Yeah.
So with some careers, like writing, for instance, age is not a factor, you see.
Right.
So, and the other thing about right livelihood, just so people know, is it because they tend to think of it as like one thing. I got to find that one thing. Well, your right livelihood can change over time, or it can expand into other things or to include other things. In other words, perhaps working in sports is your right livelihood, and perhaps you'll have a professional NFL career, let's say, for a certain number of years, and then you'll go into, who knows, you know, calling the games or writing or coaching or whatever. You'll still be in your basic field in what I would term your right livelihood for you at that time in your life.
Right. Maybe just now we'll just I'll mention your website, which is a great place to go to check out you know, what you're doing. It's jamesgoyjr.com.
I have another URL that will lead them to
a
page.
Yeah.
And that's attractmoney.biz.
Okay.
Yeah, attractmoney.biz. And I do have a free monthly Mind Power and Money e-zine that people can sign up for. And there's a free gift that they get. It's called the Mind Power Way to Attract Money when they do sign up. And every month in the free e-zine, I talk about same kinds of things we're talking about here and how they relate to attracting money. And I tell people about, you know, interviews such as this coming up and all of that. So it's a great way to be motivated each month to learn new things and to just have some support with growing your finances and improving your financial lot in life.
Right. And then maybe just tell people how they can get a hold of your book.
My book is basically available everywhere that books are sold. And, like, if you go into your local Barnes & Noble, they may not have it on the shelf, but they could order it.
Oh, okay.
But, of course, you can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go to, you know, online or Amazon. Basically, anywhere that new books are sold, you can find the book. So, like, if you, most people, they use Amazon. They sell more books than anyone. Just go to Amazon and search the title, How to Attract Money Using Mind Power, or just go online and search it. So it's pretty well wherever people already buy their books, they should be able to get my book.
Right. Well, that's good.
And it's also available on Kindle, by the way, now, and some other ebook readers for people who like the ebooks.
Cool. Well, it was great having you on as a guest. I want to thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you too. It's really very inspiring, and I feel more motivated after talking to you.
Right on. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you too.
All right. Be sure to visit our website for updates at sharethecandy.com. And if you have any questions or comments, or would like to be a guest, email us at sharethecandy@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to spread the word and share the love.